Thank you,
Father. Alright, we're going to start each session with a 2-minute meditation, followed by the serenity prayer, just so we can all get centered. We just had a meal, set our intent, so the timer starts now. Serenity prayer. Serenity prayer.
God, grant you serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. I had a little bit of a struggle there because as I was sitting in that meditation, the set-aside prayer kept coming to me. And the lay-aside prayer is referenced several times in our big book. And I would invite each of you in your own way to ask a God of your understanding to set aside everything that you think you know about this weekend so you can have an open mind and a new experience. Because the longer we stay clean and sober, the tighter the noose around our necks. And the noose around our necks is everything we think we know. And it's all of our old experiences. Thomas Merton, who is a big influence on me, one of my favorite passages is, those who say they know from the very beginning will come to know nothing at all. I have that statement has proven true. Before we start, I have to say, this man up here is one of my heroes. But I look at him at eye level because he taught me a while back, he doesn't want me to look up to him. Because me looking up to him can actually kill him. But I do consider him one of my heroes, so it is an honor for me to be sitting up here next to this man. He has influenced me greatly over the last eight plus years. And so we don't do any preparation for this. We're just going to go where Spirit leads us. Intuition. We'll talk about that a good bit this weekend. But one of the things I'm led to do right now is I want to read something out of this book, which is another great influence in my life. It's called 365 Tao. And this reading is called Adversity. A tree hemmed in by giants requires tenacity to survive. Times of adversity inevitably confront us all. We are denied influence, people will not listen to what we have to say, and we are restricted by circumstances. In this situation, followers of Spirit must rely on their determination. Without that, they cannot emerge successfully from the danger. During times of adversity, vision and determination decide the outcome. Mere doggedness never served anyone well. Observe carefully and try to act. If you find yourself tested by the situation, take comfort in the fact that adversity frequently forces one to consolidate one's resources, or in our case, tap an unsuspecting inner resource. You can often emerge from adversity stronger than before. Don't be overcome by fear. Take calculated risks if you must, or face danger if you have to. If your mind is focused to the utmost, you will triumph. Feel victorious, as Bill says in his story. Without the difficulty of being hemmed in, the tree in the forest would not be forced to marshal its power to go towards the light. It must truly bring forth all its inner strength to spread its branches. If it becomes grand, it is in part because of its suffering. Thus, the times of adversity, or struggle, or darkness, can be crucial to the development of one's inner personality and refines our character. Early recovery for me was about staying away from the discomfort and the struggles. If I did enough meditation, if I prayed enough, if I sponsored enough guys, if I went to enough meetings, if I had service commitments, I wouldn't struggle as much. Now I invite struggle into my life because I know, because of the intent I set, my character is constantly being honed and polished as a result of my struggles. And the most beautiful and merciful aspects of my struggle is I have been blessed with a willingness to keep going to God regardless of how dark it gets. I have a poverty in me. It's a need for God. And I didn't create that on my own. I can't claim it. It was given to me. And there's a tremendous amount of mercy in that because I don't see that in everybody. I've done a lot of work at the Salvation Army over the years. And I sit across from these men, very articulate, very smart men who've been out on the street for years and years. And their first step makes mine look like a walk in the park. But yet they don't have the willingness to commit. And you'll hear me talk about commitment several times over the course of the weekend. They don't have the commitment. And a long time ago, I realized how much of that is a gift. Then there's the argument about pre-selection or what have you. I don't want to get into that debate. Don't claim your willingness as a suggestion I have for you. It'll put your relationship with God at a place of reverence. Reverence means respect and gratitude. Because I'm watching if what's going on in the world with this heroin epidemic is here, then I'm sure you're watching people die left and right. And for whatever reason, my Creator wakes me up every morning with the same degree of willingness I had yesterday. And I don't see that. So there's mercy and there's a grace in that. This first session, we're going to sort of share how we have ended up here. We're going to devote the second session to steps one and two, hopefully, maybe just step one. We'll see how quickly God moves us. A power greater than myself separated me from whiskey and crack cocaine on the morning November 5th, 2007. I was 31 years old when I was delivered to Cocaine Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd been going to meetings for 3 years prior to that, but I was not a member. I don't believe you're a member until you commit to the 12-step process. I don't care how many meetings you go to. That's just my opinion. In the early days, we had a program supported by some fellowship. Now we have a fellowship with an optional program. I had all the if-only stories. If only I hadn't been molested by a family member between ages 5 and 7. If only my dad hadn't been so old. He was in his early 40s, so he's older than all the other dads. If only my father had come to my basketball games. If only my father had remembered my birthdays. If only my father had not been a drunk. If only my father had not physically, verbally, and emotionally abused me, my brother, my mother, and my grandmother. If only my brother, didn't take a turn to a life of, crime. If only I hadn't discovered the Grateful Dead. all the if-only stories. But the reality of it, the if-only stories have nothing to do with my alcoholism and my drug addiction. I look back at my experience and the loss of control once I start with alcohol. Most of the time, I'm not gonna hold the intent I had going into the drinking. My intent was never to get sick. Now, getting sick has nothing to do with being alcoholic, but the fact that I had the intent not to get sick and I got sick has everything to do with alcoholism. I did a lot of heroin, crystal meth, pills, synthetic drugs, ecstasy, LSD. I loved all of it. I only had a mental obsession for two substances, whiskey and crack cocaine. They're the only ones that I had an obsession for, and I only served one master. When the big book says pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, the only substance that did that to me was crack cocaine. All the times I ended up in a sober living program or a treatment center, if you walked up to me and said, "Hey, why are you here?" "I can't stop smoking crack." Never did I say, "I can't stop drinking. I can't stop doing boy. Heroin. I can't stop eating ecstasy. I can't stop eating these Xanax and these Klonopin," although I love doing all of them. I get real specific. I had loss of control physically with a lot of those substances. The thing is, when I sobered up, and I always did, 24, 48, 72 hours, I was hunted like prey by crack cocaine. That's just my experience. I'm crystal clear on my first step. Crack cocaine is my master. I'd met my match. I'd been overwhelmed. I graduated from college, and then I worked for three Fortune 500 companies, and as a result of my addiction, my relationship with Mr. Crack, I lost all those jobs. And then on the evening of November 4th, 2007, I was arrested with two Schedule 1 charges, felonies. One was for intent to distribute, and the other one was drug trafficking. And I was in the state of Florida, and I'd been bouncing in and out of meetings. I'd gone to big book studies off and on. I'd gone to some really good meetings. And I stayed up all night. Oh, that is so cool. There's a little ladybug there. I stayed up all night, and I remember sitting on the edge of my cot. I won't even call it a bed. My cot. And the realization came to me. It wasn't a cognitive process on my part. I didn't create this thought. It was delivered to me through me by the Creator. And it hit me that my new sobriety date was my buddy Jason's birthday, and he had died from a drug overdose on my birthday in 2003. Now, he had passed away on my birthday. Unfortunately, they didn't find his body until the next day. And I knew that it wasn't a coincidence. I knew some galactic, cosmic consciousness, power, creative intelligence did that. It was a sign. And as the next 5 weeks would unfold for me, I kept getting these prompts, as Mike calls them. And for a specific reason, I paid attention to all the prompts. The reason I paid attention to all the prompts was because the voice of the liar, every single person sitting in this room has a voice that lies to you. It talks you out of the things that are in your highest good. This voice was put into remission. I say remission because it's coming back. It's going to come back and it's going to reassert itself on the scene. And so my voice had gone into remission. And so I started getting out of my cell, and I went to Bible study, and I would hear them talk about these scriptures, and it would remind me of something all of you told me at a 12-step meeting. I'd heard it before. So the prompts were telling me where to go, and nothing was discounting any of my prompts. I read two books when I was incarcerated. One was called Live Your Best Life Now, and the other was Exceeding Gratitude for the Creator. And I saw these topics like making amends and gratitude being action and not just attitude. You live a life where you're grateful in your actions. There are a couple other, forgiveness and all things that you folks had told me in 3 years of bouncing in and out. And for the first time, the four closest people to me, mom, dad, brother, and my best friend, turned their back on me. Every time I hung up the phone, I experienced the very beginning of the chapter of Vision for You. Terror, bewilderment, despair. I can't remember the fourth horseman.
Frustration.
Every time I hung up that phone, I had no plan and no design. See, every other time I had a plan and a design of how I was going to get myself out of it. It required the assistance of someone in my life. That didn't happen. eventually a friend of mine, not even in the picture, got me a lawyer. Now granted, I was the type of crackhead that would disappear and the family did not know where I was for weeks and months at a time. And so I had not seen my mom in quite some time. I think it had been like 6 weeks maybe this time. And they shackled me to all the men going to court that day for arraignment. Took us into the courtroom. And the attorney approached me. And I asked him, I said, have you spoken to my mother? And he said, yeah, she's in the gallery. So when I turned to look at my mother, it was one of those experiences where everything sort of on the outside goes sort of fuzzy. And I've got this clear tunnel to my mom. And what I see is this woman that's frail. Her eyes are black. Very skinny. Had not eaten in a long time. Weak. And she almost collapsed in the courtroom. And in that instance, I experienced what the big book calls the turning point, which is always rooted in genuine surrender. And the surrender, as we get into this first step, is a part. You can't work a surrender. You can work a first step around powerlessness by looking at your experience, but I'm going to tell you, a surrender is either there or it's not. And we're going to talk about compliance versus surrender. And compliance always has a hint of defiance in it, deep down inside. I was surrendered in that moment. And everything in me, every cell in my body didn't want to smoke crack or drink whiskey again. And every cell in my body knew I was going to drink whiskey and smoke crack again. I'd reached the jumping off place. I couldn't see my life with it. I couldn't see my life without it. That's a beautiful place to be. Our program is filled with paradoxes. One of which is the more hopeless you are when you arrive here, the more hope there is for you. And they released me into a 90-day inpatient program. And I said, I got to get to this Friday night CA meeting. Because one of the other pieces of information that was delivered to me was I needed to go to the specific CA meeting on Friday night. And all I could remember was this man named Dante, who's still in my life today. He was my first grand sponsor. He was my sponsor for a year and a half. And he's been a very close confidant and mentor ever since. This man was the type of man that would tell new people to really, you just need to be quiet until you've worked these 12 steps and you've started working with others. You know, in the forward of the second edition, I think it's the first edition, they tell you we're really interested in hearing from those who have commenced work with others. So that group was really big on it. We really don't want to hear a damn thing you got to say until you're sponsoring people. But me, in all those years prior, I was like, who does this guy think he is? He can't talk to me like that. But now that I have groups that I belong to, and the message in those groups is we have to protect it. It requires protection because newcomers get confused. They hear all kinds of different messages. The message is simple. It used to be on the dust cover. The first 164 pages describing the AA way of life is the message. That's simple. It describes a way of life. It's a recipe. And so I get to the treatment center. I said, you guys got to take me to this meeting on Friday night. Finally, they take us down there. There's one guy, Randy. I need to get hooked up with him. He tried to sponsor me before. I don't know what his phone is. His number is not working. They take us down in the big treatment center van. We're late getting to the meeting on Friday night. The meeting's already started. There's one man standing outside the church on underneath the awning. And I get out of the van and I run up to the church and it's the guy I'm looking for. I walked back into his life and I said, hey, I'll do whatever you want me to do. I don't want to live this way anymore. And we started meeting. Once a week, we would cover a chapter in the big book. And in 4 months, he cut me loose to start sponsoring. And that's when I connected all the dots. And all those other years, I would walk into the treatment center. On day one, I'm willing to follow anyone's suggestion. By day 30, I'm not following anyone's suggestions. By day 60, they've asked me to get a job. And in the meantime, I've started to eat. I'm going to the gym. I'm going to a meeting every night. And by day 90, I've gotten a couple of paychecks. I've got money in my pocket. Girl starts talking to me. I'm in recovery. All right? This is how it unfolded for me. And then something happens to where life throws a curveball and I need an anesthetic to cope with the curveball and I start smoking pot, drinking beer, eating Valium, then I'm smoking crack and doing Oxycontin. This is how my thing unfolds. I never had anything to connect me to day one. Never had anything to connect me to day one. So the fear associated with day one, the hopelessness, the frustration, the bewilderment, the despair on day one dissipates. He cut me loose to sponsor. I go over to a sober house. I'm taking a guy through the steps. First one, he's got a week clean, and I connected all the dots. I said, oh my God, I remember this. I remember what it was like to have a week, and I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to never have a week clean again. And that's it. That commitment has never wavered. I work in this industry. I own a recovery program. It's not my 12-step work. I'm actively sponsoring five guys through the steps right now. It takes up a lot of my time. Well, I'm going to tell you guys, sponsorship requires inconvenience. It also requires sacrifice. One of the things I will continually ask you this weekend is, what are you sacrificing? What are you sacrificing? And so I had this court case going on. I was looking at 3 years in prison. My lawyer even convinced me that I was going to a work camp. I was going to be sentenced to 3 years, get two for one, and be out in 18 months. And my sponsor guaranteed me something. He said, Tarek, if you work these steps, repair the damage, start to repair the damage you've caused and help other guys work the steps, you're going to be okay with whatever happens. But if you don't do that, it's not going to end well for you. And I believed him. And that's what I did. And I started to document my recovery. I kept all the drug screens. They asked me to do a big book study while I was still a client in the treatment center, which fascinates me till this day. I had staff members sitting in my big book study. I got a job, and then they hired me once I got into the sober living as a clinical assistant at the main house. And I got back into school, my graduate school. I'd been kicked out of graduate school in the early 2000s, so I got back in. And I got my own place, so I had a rental lease in this folder, and I kept my lawyer updated on all the progress. And 9 months to the day, my lawyer, you know, we filed this motion to suppress evidence. We're about to file the motion. He's got all the information I've sent him. August 5th, 2008, he goes in to meet with the assistant district attorney, and the district attorney dropped all the charges. No community service, no probation. I didn't have to rat anyone out. I witnessed a miracle. Now, the word miracle is a little overused. You know, I hear a lot of people say, I woke up today, it's a miracle the sun came up. Well, no, it's not a miracle the sun comes up. The sun's going to come up every single day. It can be explained. The word miracle means I witnessed something that I have no explanation for. I had no explanation for how that happened. And I made a commitment to my Creator that morning that I was going to live the way of life described in this big book from that moment to whenever God decides to remove my spirit from this body. And that's what I've done, by the grace of God. And I've gone through a lot of adversity in my almost 10 and a half years. I've gone through a lot of dark times. In 2014, I had a list of events that took place in my life. I had five surgeries. I was put on pain medication five different times that year. I had a kidney stone. The house was broken into. My wife and daughter didn't feel safe. So, you know, with 7 years of recovery or 6 years of recovery, I have to move back into my parents' basement. That's not something I wanted to do, and I had to go do that. I had dealt with identity theft. My wife went on a girls' trip, and I had to put down her dog to sleep while she was gone. I battled depression, debilitating depression, for the first time in my entire life. Not even the type of depression where you binge watch Netflix. The type of depression where you don't want to get out of bed and the curtains are closed and your wife has to go behind your back to call your sponsor, which she had never done before. And then they found a tumor on my vocal cord, and I had to have it removed, and I couldn't talk for a week. No talking for a week. And meditation's been a part of my daily life for almost 9 years. And not talking for a week and having to communicate with this app where you have to type and then the app speaks for you. You want to talk about some frustration at times. But it took me to that place. And then I'll never forget, like, I went in to have surgery. They're like, oh, you're only going to be on crutches for 3 to 5 days. I come out of the surgery, you've got no cartilage in your right knee, you're going to be on crutches for 8 weeks. So I started to put on all this weight. And then one morning, after all these events have transpired, all those events I just listed, And I forgot to mention another one. My daughter started having seizures and found out she had epilepsy. And so we were in the hospital for 2.5 days trying to figure out how to cope with all that. And that all happened over a 7-month stretch. And near the tail end of it, this was probably in the middle of it, I went to put on one of my favorite shirts and I gained too much weight to put it on. And I literally ripped it off like the Incredible Hulk. I was so angry. And I told my creator, a God of my understanding, that he could suck my you-know-what. And I couldn't believe he was treating me like this after helping all his damn kids. And I was very indignant. And I was yelling and screaming. I thought a blood vessel was about to burst on my head. And then I dropped to my knees and said one of the most sincere prayers that I've ever said in my entire life. And that's, I think, beautiful. Because it takes those times to take me into sincere prayer. And you're going to hear me say this a few times over the weekend. Prayer that is absent the heart is invalid. It took all those things to bring my heart into the prayer. Almost to the point where I was begging to have my Creator in my life. Because it was the only form of safety and security and sanctuary that I could experience. And then last year, I lost my father, my marriage, my daughter, all in the same month. I took care of my father. He died of liver cancer. Death certificate says liver cancer. It was alcoholism. And my wife and I, my activity in recovery was one of the contributing factors to my marriage falling apart because my recovery was more important than my marriage. I tried to make the marriage and my stepdaughter a close second, but it just didn't work out too well. And there were other contributing factors. But the beautiful part, again, is the most sincere prayer life I've ever experienced emerged out of those experiences. I've grown more in what I just described to you than all of the joyful, pleasurable things that happened in my life. Okay? My father, I did not know until I sobered up. I fell in love with my father because I realized I was him. That if I lost the power of choice, control, and I wasn't responsible for all the things that transpired when I was in the midst of the physical craving, does it mean I'm not responsible to go make the amends? No, don't misunderstand me. I'm still responsible to go make all those amends. And I realized my father had not had a choice either. And compassion poured out of me from my father. And I started taking care of my father. And I took care of him for 10 years. I grew closer to him than any other family member. Yeah, I didn't know him. I hated him. That's the power of this program. So, that brings you current with me. I have an active home group. I sponsor guys. I have a tremendous amount of transparent dialogue with several people in my life. And I work the first 9 steps on a regular basis every year. Why? Because I like the effect produced by it. Okay? That's it. No, not everybody has to do it. I'm not going to tell you what to do this weekend. I'm going to share with you precisely what I have done to recover. That's what I'm going to do this week. That's my intent. And hopefully you'll walk away with some new practice that you can put into practical application after you leave here. Okay? I'm going to turn it over to Mike.
Thank you. My name is Mike D. And it's an honor and a privilege. Even though I've been doing this, seems like forever, whenever I get a chance to do this, it's an honor and a blessing. And it's good to be here tonight with you men and women. And new people, a lot of new people. Raise your hand, new people, don't be shy. If you're new, under 30 days, raise your hand, don't be shy. Let me see your hands. Right, raise your hands. Yeah, don't be shy. February 23rd, out of the Cherokee Feast of Days, Daily Meditations. It says, a winner carries with him the quiet knowledge that he has heard every argument, faced every opposition, felt every criticism, But there is no turning back and no accepting defeat. Rejection is one of the oldest forms of torture. If a dozen people approve of us and one does not, our thought is riveted on the one and what his reason is for not liking us. But time and circumstances change so swiftly. Nothing stays the same. What was real and possible is suddenly out of reach, or we find amazing success where we have failed a dozen times. If we give up, we forfeit everything. Look beyond rejection. See beyond limits. Think around the bend in the road. It may be that we have been trying to settle for less than the best, and we have been doing it for a very long time. The path of glory is rough, and many gloomy hours obscure it. May the Great Spirit shed light onto yours. Black Hawk, 1833. I thank you for that, Eric. Language of the heart. The language of the heart. The language of the heart. There's a talk that's done here. And there's a talk that's done in the room that not everybody does. And it's a talk that needs to be adapted by the individual that come to us, that this is the last house on the block for you. You've tried every option, every way, every drug, every man, every woman, every city, every state, every country, every bank. You've tried everything to get some control over your life, and also to manage your drinking and your using or your whatever, your mind-altering deal, and you have been unsuccessful. That's who the 12-step rooms are for. I'm very opinionated, like I said, before you leave this weekend, somebody's not going to like me. Matter of fact, somebody don't like me already. But that's just who I am. I speak truth. I don't compromise who I am. My recovery has awarded me a life beyond my wildest dreams. I was talking to a young lady at dinner, and we were just chatting. And I said, you know, in my first piece of work, I had no idea that recovery was what it is about. A lot of you think that it's just about not drinking and not using. And initially, that might be enough for you. But so much more waits for you if you grasp what we do. And you grasp getting in touch with the language of the heart. I'm an individual that comes from a little country called Harlem, New York, in the midst of Manhattan, New York, segregated back in the 60s, early 70s, quite racist. It often tickles me, and I've been doing this type of deal for a very long time when I sit in a room like this and I'm the only black man in the room. It's quite a testimony to what God is capable of doing. It's quite a testimony as to what God will do with an individual, whether you want him to or not. He will take you, he will reshape you, he will remold you, and he will turn you into a useful vessel for anybody that's willing to listen. And what happened for me is that a lot of who I was had to be shed. I had to lose a lot as a result of wanting to live life differently. And that didn't start when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. I wanted to live life differently and be different at the age of 8 when I started sniffing airplane glue out of a paper bag. I wanted to alter who I was. It became apparent that I wanted something different when I started drinking wine at the age of 11, 12. And continually addressed a substance in an effort to recreate me. And I believe that's all a lot of us want. We just want to be recreated. The problem with it is we don't know how to do it. We think we do. Because trust me, my humanness wants to run my life. And as a result of that, from a very young age, I consistently ran up against brick walls. Because I didn't have the power to do what was needed to be done in my life. And I used the excuses that a lot of us use. I was the youngest of 5 brothers, and my brother next to me was 9 years older than me, and my father had my older brother, and he left my mother, and he did what we do when, you know, us men, us macho men, you know, we get a woman and we think we own her for the rest of our lives. And don't get it twisted, you women are the same way, you know. So 9 years later, after hanging out with Mama off and on, you know, he came back and hung out, and I was conceived, and my mother did not get rid of me. But he was never around. So at a very tender age of about 12, 13, the psychiatrist tried to tell me I was the way I was because my father left. Something became altered way before that. Something put me in a category of having the disease of untreated alcoholism and untreated drug addiction way before that. Something up here turned from who I was created to be originally to be that I did not really want to be, but I had to survive. And what's happened for me over the 30 years that I've been here, I don't care what color you are, I don't care if you're female, I don't care if you're in Spain or the UK or wherever you're from, there's a common denominator that runs through the rooms of recovery. And it's very simple. Something became altered in you very young in your life. And young for you could have been 27 or 30-something. Or young for you could have been in your adolescent years. Or before that. But something along the line became altered in you where you begin to have trouble with page 18 in the big book, middle paragraph on page 52, and the end of page 151 in the vision for you. Your spirit became twisted. And you did not know how to identify and live life and live with people out here. And as a result of that, this became mangled. And something needed to happen. So at a very young age, I found drugs. At a very young age, I found women. At a very young age, I found out how to make illegal money, which all felt good. Because growing up the way I did in that ghetto in New York, I grew up with very little. So anything that I had, any type of substance to it, I grabbed onto. Didn't matter that the keys to the kingdom, which are given in the 12 steps room, are the same keys that were given to me the first 8 years of my life, growing up in that little church in Harlem, New York. With that spiritual mother, evangelist, with a godmother who was pastor, minister, and a grandmother who was senior mother in that little church I grew up with. Didn't matter that those seeds they planted in me didn't begin to flourish till after I left there. But I'm thankful that they were planted. So there's a language here that I don't know who you are this evening. I don't know what your story is, but a dollar to a donut, somebody in here, you're just like me. And you're not just a man, you're a woman too. Something is lacking. Something is lacking. I need to find my people. I need to find out who I can identify with. I need to find somebody that I can be transparent with, that I can get totally naked with, not physically, but totally shed everything. That's where sponsorship and accountability comes in. The 12 steps are a stripping mechanism. It strips you of self. After a realization in step one that self is damn near what killed you. And I become willing because I wake up to the knowingness that I'm dying. That didn't happen to me to the age of 37. I ran the gamut from that year of 8 to the age of 19, being introduced to heroin at the age of 16. And by the age of 18, I was a strung out junkie. And I don't really like drugalogues, and I don't really like war stories. I've been trained, my teachers trained me to carry the message. They trained me to bring hope to somebody. They first trained me to come and fuck you up. To rattle your cage. To get you in a place to begin to think about what's really going on. What's really going on? Anybody with anything going on, are they sitting in a 12-step retreat tonight? Or are they home watching TV or enjoying the fun of their family and their kids? Or in a resort somewhere down in the Bahamas, or over in Europe somewhere, or whatever. I'm here because this is what I do. It's become a way of life for me. I love it. I love it. If I can just touch one somebody before we leave here Sunday, my job is done. Yeah, I got a job. I got a job. And it's not the job I do from Monday through Friday. My employer is not that employer I work for from Monday through Friday. My employer is God. And I specifically came here this weekend to help somebody. That's it. In the hopes that you hear something, wherever you are in your recovery, whether you're new, you're in between, or you're old, we still got something for you. We got a language of the heart that you might need to take on as a personal way of living life. And stop skirting through recovery. I used to be a vigilante with a sword and a shield, and I had my helmet on and shit. And first 10 years of recovery, I went through the rooms just chopping people up. You know, relapse is not an option, and you just don't want to stay, and just bullshit, man. I've come to the realization over the years that some people, they have to relapse. They're not thoroughly convinced. Just because I came in 1987 and I stayed don't mean that that has to be your experience. But whatever your experience it is, I need to support you in that. And I need to love you through that. Until you can learn to love yourself. I love me today. I go anywhere that a armored man can go with God. And that didn't happen overnight. It's taken a lot of work. But that first piece of work that I was introduced to in 1987 went into my last treatment program in 1987. First treatment program at the age of 19. So I used to, like I said, I had a vigilante and relapse. You know, you like twisted if you relapse. Well, I relapsed from 1987. Spirit showed me that after being here for a minute. You ain't all that great, Mike. You've relapsed too. I didn't know about you guys until 1987. Didn't go into treatment because I was thoroughly convinced. In the back of my head, there was something wrong with shooting dope. But wasn't nothing wrong with smoking a little bit of reefer and sniffing a little bit of cocaine. Wasn't nothing wrong with that. It's a way of life where I come from. Matter of fact, where I come from, if you don't get high, they looking at you like something's wrong with you. So I was going to do something for the rest of my life. until that last treatment program when those panelists started coming in and they started talking about 12-step fellowships. I didn't know nothing about that. I didn't know nothing about the big book. I didn't know nothing about a process outlined from the title page to page 164. I didn't know there was 12 steps. I didn't know I needed a teacher, a sponsor, to guide me through that book. I didn't know that there was a textbook for recovery. Didn't know all of that, but by the time I had got to that period in my life, Heron had thoroughly beat me down. Had beat me down. And the sad part about it is that I didn't see that until I got into that first piece of work after staying in that treatment program for 14 months. Didn't see it those 14 months. Nothing changed in that treatment program. I just didn't use. That's it. My thinking didn't change. There was still a piece of me that believed Heron was the problem. I know today, based in fact, in my own personal experience, that Heron is not the problem. Mike D is the problem. Why are you still here? I'll have 31 years in a couple of days. Why are you still here 31 years later? Because I'll wake up any given morning and buy the lie. I don't care how much recovery I got. I'll buy the lie that I can run my life. And the minute I buy the lie, I'm in trouble. The minute I go to sleep, I'm in trouble. Why? Because Heron's looking for me. Ain't gonna stop. Don't care nothing about me being here with you guys this weekend. Don't care about all the people I sponsor all over in Timbuktu. Heron don't care nothing about that. Heron don't care about how much you... Don't care. Heron's got a job. For somebody in here tonight, crack cocaine's got a job. It's looking for you. Alcohol is looking for you. And if something don't change, you are going to pick up again. Dollar to a donut. But thank God I found a failsafe. Thank God I found a solution. I became willing to abandon myself to somebody after I got out of that treatment program after 14 months. I became willing to follow his directions, not his suggestions. I don't buy suggestions in the big book. I don't believe in the word. I believe suggestions is for poopies. I need clear-cut directions on how to recover. I don't know if you like me. I didn't want some mediocre dope in the street. I wanted the best Heron they had. And I went to any length to get it. Why does it change when we get here? I don't want a slice of cake. I want the whole goddamn cake. Why should it change here? Why do we settle? Why do we settle for crumbs? We become crumb snatchers. Were you a crumb snatcher in the street? Don't be a crumb snatcher here. Thank God that thinking and that mentality followed me into the rooms of recovery. Everything I learned out there wasn't bad. Everything that you've learned through your life is not bad. That's why we have something called the lay aside prayer. God, please lay aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. And what's not of good and what's not of pertinent value until your life being altered and recreated, he'll take away. Be careful. Be careful, though. It's going to fuck you up. Because I think I know something. We knuckleheads. I'm included. I'm in the club. I got a little Mike D thing, like, it's called Club in the Club. There's a club in the club. Everybody in this room tonight, you ain't like me. You ain't like me. Been around for a minute. I know a bunch of people, man. Been in recovery 20, 30 plus years. They never worked a step in their life and still clean. Ain't never had a sponsor, still clean. They ain't like me. God bless them. Wish I could do it, can't do it. I'm thoroughly convinced. So something happened in 1987. God stepped in. Somebody don't want to hear that word either. God stepped in and he did what he did. He recreated me again. He created me in the beginning, in my mother's womb. Then he stepped in and he recreated me again. And he's given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. Very simple, too. Simplicity to the point of how does this happen? How do I get in a room like this? How do I wind up in Spain and the UK and Amsterdam, and I'm going to Portugal to do a retreat at the end of September? How does that happen for a guy stuck in a 4-block radius for 20-some years and could not get out? As bad as I wanted to get out, I could not get out. I was stuck with reason and purpose to come here tonight and tell somebody, if you really want to be free, you can be free. And if you don't, go do what you got to do and come back. It's a couple of us here. We'll be here when you get back. Because we thoroughly convinced. We know that this life is infinite. This ain't all he's got for me. He took them 8 years in that little church, and after I got clean, it was clean about 15 years, he said, okay, now go back to those people. Go see those people. What you know about living in spirit world? They knew about living in spirit world. Go see them and talk to them. Why? Because Tim says we've entered the world of the spirit. That's God's world. What do you know about that, Mike? I said, nothing, only what they told me. Well, go talk to them. Because you need to learn out how to live in my world. Fourth dimension. Book talk. I didn't say it. The book says it. Awesome deal. My entire life is chaotic around me. And in the midst of the storm, I can be at perfect peace. Perfect peace. And it becomes as a result of a process that I surrender myself to and abandon myself to the teachings of another man as directed by God. And it's real. But it ain't for everybody. It's for the mad dog. Somebody in here tonight, you're a mad dog. You're a mad dog about your drinking and your using. You're a mad dog about living life. You better become a mad dog about your recovery. You went to any lengths out there? You better be willing to go to any lengths here. Because your buddy's going to come by one day and swoop you up and take you with him. And you're going to be sitting there wondering, how the hell did I get here again? And the sad part about it is that you done had that experience over and over and over and over. And here you sit again. So that's a little bit about who I am. I wrote a workbook. It's called Bridge to Shore, Process of Recovery. I brought a few with me. That's for a donation you can purchase. I'll be working out of it as we go through the weekend. I'll be using my big book that's all highlighted and underlined and ripped up. And I read a lot of spiritual books, brought some of them with me, don't know if I'm going to use them or not. I never know what I'm going to do when I come on one of these. I just let Spirit direct me and I come. Like I started to bring 365 Tao and Spirit said, don't take that, take another one. I know why now, because T brought his. I look for confirmation. I was talking about with somebody earlier. I look for confirmation that Spirit and God is real. He better be. He better be more powerful than Heron. Heron was powerful. Heron changed me from the inside out. I need something to happen here that changes me from the inside out. And you know what? That's happened. That's happened. I'm here to stay. I ain't going nowhere. So I'm just tickled about being here. I'm a real one, too. I ain't a poopy. I told you before, I'll tell you again. I love Heron. I just got the power not to mess with it anymore. What is it about this weekend? It's about the acquisition of power. It's about getting some power in my life where I begin to live life on a level where I'm happy, joyous, free, healthy, prosperous, loving, understanding, caring, a husband to my wife, a wife to my husband, a mother to my kids, a father to my kids, a son to my mother. That's what this is about. It's about life-changing stuff. Drinking and using is this much of what we suffer from.
Mm-hmm.
This much. And he'll gladly take that. But are you willing for him to take the other stuff? We come in here and we get rid of that and we take on other addictions. Become a workaholic. Or become a sex addict. Or become a money monger. And I finally get to this place to ask myself, is it worth it? There's another book that says, is it worth gaining the whole world and losing your soul? Another book I work with. I'm also a licensed minister. You might not think that the way I talk sometimes. But I believe God don't care. He don't care. I'm about helping his kids, man. And something miraculous happens as a result of you doing all 12 steps and you get to 12. The key is stepping out of you and helping somebody else. That's it. Because my entire life I've been a taker. Take, 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 take. Now I'm a giver. You don't have to give me nothing in return. I'll help you. So I'm glad to be here. I think that's enough out of me. We're going to take another break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk some more. All right? Thanks.